Welcome to the Procurement Games podcast and open conversations where we pose the question, is the field ever leveled in our favor? Of course, we are talking about procurement and contracting of minority, women, and veteran-owned small businesses deemed to be the underutilized firms in government and private corporation contracting. So, my name is Arlen Pingle, and I am a proud Filipina-American entrepreneur. I lead Mackie Company, a strategic consulting organization focused on procurement supply chain management. We basically help government agencies and private companies design race, ethnic, and gender-conscious contract policies and procedures. More importantly, we help folks like you build capacity, capability, and sustainability. Now, as I mentioned before, this is not a platform to gripe. We are sharing your stories and experiences, but we also want to share how the system works, and more importantly, how to beat it. And if we can find a way to generate solutions that make sense for you, we will do that too. In our studio today is the president of G. Harris Consulting, Miss Jerry Harris herself.
Hey.
I am really looking forward to having this conversation with you, Miss Jerry. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
I'm really anxious to hear the story behind Miss Jerry Harris and how she came to be. And then we'll talk about G. Harris Consulting and how that came about. So, tell me about you.
I am a girl from the south side of Chicago. That's my home. I was born and raised. And I decided very early on at second year of high school that I wanted to be in architecture. And my path in this industry has been sealed since then. I've not deviated from it. And it really crystallized in terms of my passion and purpose when I would walk home from school and see all of the boarded up, dilapidated buildings. And I said, I'm going to grow up and help fix this. After a lengthy career with working for a black-owned business in Chicago, I was recruited to Las Vegas in 2005 to work for MGM Resorts to head the contracts department for their design and development division.
So tell me a little bit about that. What was that like? Because you had to have some interactions from the private sector, from the MBEs, WBEs, veteran small businesses. How was that ecosystem coming into Las Vegas?
That's a good question, because in Chicago, a very heavy union town, I worked with all of the diverse businesses, as and being a part of a diverse owned business myself then was fascinating. I worked early on with what was called affirmative action, as you talked about in the dark side of procurement, all of the various certification types that would need to be sought after. And coming from that environment to then Las Vegas, which on the strip still requires union contractors and subcontractors. However, it was totally different, because coming into the company, such a large company, I really expected there to be a lot of formality that I would have to step into that would be kind of like a, here's the playbook, here, go. But that was not the case.
What was your interaction with our community? What was influential in a way that really changed the inclusivity in MGM?
Coming into the MGM company was an interesting journey, because I began in July of 2005, and in August of 2005, Katrina happened, which I counted as a blessing and an immersion. I really say just a baptism into the whole MGM environment, because it required us to then immediately go into full force launching contracts to rebuild the Beau Rivage resort that is down there in Beau Rivage, and working with, again, all hands on deck and understanding all of the contracting aspects, all aspects of inclusion that was then being practiced, was a quick immersion.
When we look at that landscape, the baptismal by fire and such, you know, what was going in your head? Because I'm always curious, for someone in your role, seated, you know, up there, how you extended that hand to ensure that there was inclusivity.
Right? Absolutely. The company was definitely in favor of and supportive of inclusivity, because that was one of the main reasons that they were attracted to bringing me on board. The primary focus was to work on and with the team to develop contracting and language that also spoke to inclusion and how they would track and monitor and report up to the board. in regards to the participation.
And that's really important to hear, that an organization as big as MGM had it down, or at least they were lucky to have you, to really ensure that language, inclusivity language, is included. And that's really what's lacking in some of the industry, well, in the majority of the industries that exist in procurement, whether it be private sector or the government sector that we talk about, right? And so I think it's commendable for MGM to recognize that, but it's also, you know, huge commendation for you because you ensured that.
It was a very important role. And one of the things that also helped attract me to MGM was the fact that I was coming in to help play in that role, be a part of the success of the company in being focused on having inclusive practices in construction.
So what gave the leeway for entrepreneurship? As I like to say, what was your inspiration to become an entrepreneur now? It takes a lot to leave corporate world.
As executive director of diversity and contracts for MGM, I had the privilege to help with the development of the diversity and inclusion program for one of the major resorts, the MGM National Harbor Project. And on that project, again, my whole purpose and passion kind of came forward as I was then the conduit to help all of those individuals that lived in that community, Prince George's County, have access to all of the opportunity within the building of that new beautiful resort. There, just as in Las Vegas, I would interact often with many diverse-owned businesses. I would help them navigate entering into being considered for bid opportunities with the company, help them to understand what the policies and practices were, and also to help evaluate their readiness, because many of them were very efficient and proficient in their skill.
Absolutely.
However, some of their administrative aspects and back of house, so to speak, resources and systems were not as strong.
Absolutely. And you know, doing the work that Mackey Company does in that ecosystem, we certainly recognize the lack of what I call the infrastructure of the business, the foundation of the business, the accounting, the administration, the operations management, even the marketing, right? And what I pride myself with is really understanding their skill level and where they can go with that skill level, but ensuring that their back of the house is definitely, you know, up to par. Because when you play in a field like MGM, there are standards and expectations that have to be met. And we, as small businesses, we fail in our administration, in our accounting, in our, in the paperwork. And there's so much documentation required. And sometimes we don't know what we don't know.
It was very helpful for me to be able to speak the language to both sides of the house to help the professional services and the contract subcontractors bridge the gap to understand how to integrate into the system, how to navigate all of what they needed to do.
I echo that because there's so many of us who know how to do the work, like perfect, and we fail in some of the processes, and we need someone like yourself who could, was it walk the walk, talk the talk?
Absolutely.
And not feel like they've been talked down to.
Absolutely.
And that's the difference, I think, in both the work that we do, because we do understand the processes, we do understand how to get them from A to Z, but it's our community that needs to realize we are on their side, as opposed to not encroaching in any of the, you know, misnomers out there of construction management. So let me pivot back to the entrepreneur,
yes,
right? Let me go back there. I'm not going to let you skirt that one. Did you wake up one morning,
nope,
cup of tea, and say, I'm going to be an entrepreneur? Or was it that just suppressed in your corporate world?
I think what's really interesting about it when I think back is that I was preparing myself before I left Chicago to be a executive within that company. And because I so admired the leaders that were there, female, black male, and Indian, that owned that company, that was so inspirational to me. The seed had been planted, so it was budding. And then when I came here, MGM was willing to support my continued education in that space, in me getting my master's. Once I finished my studies for my master's in business administration, I had the bug to start a business, but was so entrenched in doing the business of MGM that I did not take time to nurture that thought. And as it would be, in 2020, we all know what happened to change the world. COVID hit, and MGM, being one of the largest, if not the largest employer here in the Valley, laid off 60,000 people. And I was one of those people. Can you be ready? The path... How can you be ready?
Yeah.
Because I knew from my role that the company would hire consultants because I wrote contracts for the consultants. And I said, Jerry, be ready. And that's what I did. And what I didn't realize is all of the asking that I was doing of the small and diverse owned businesses, I then had to apply to myself.
You had your journey. It was a role reversal. You had to sit here and go through.
Complete role reversal.
Absolutely. How was that? You know, I love that because, you know, my, how the tables have turned, right?
Completely.
My, how the tables are turned. And I know that, I'm sure in your role, you've thrown the, I don't know why it's taking so long to put this together. I don't know why they can't just give me these forms. And so now we flip that script and we sit here and go, Jerry.
Yes.
How was that experience of not putting those papers together and, you know, your contract administrator's going...
Yes. So now I have much greater compassion and empathy for diverse and small owned businesses. And when the pandemic hit, what happened was I got still. I got quiet. I went within. And that's when I was able to really connect with myself and many others in the industry in a totally different way.
Well, and their lenses look at you different too.
Absolutely.
Right? And they see you as one. And so now you almost have to pivot from that image of them and rebrand and reaffirm who you are as Jerry Harris, you know, president of Gia Harris Consulting, as opposed to Jerry Harris, executive director, MGM.
Exactly.
So we talked about in other podcasts the certification process,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I always look at when I certify businesses or take them through the journey of the DBE certification, how did you feel about disclosing your life, right, into all of these required documents only to get a medallion for a DBE, right? Again, putting back the hat of you asked for all of this, your financials, to vet you as a consultant, and you're like, I don't understand. So now everyone else is coming to you going, how did I feel?
It felt crazy. It was, some
like,
of it
why
was,
do I have to do this?
I was in disbelief, honestly. You would think that as an African-American woman, I would not have to present documentation to prove that I was an African-American. However, to get my MBE certification, that is what was required.
Yeah.
And I was very strategic about the certification or alphabet soup category that I wanted to go after first. And I needed to just pace myself on how I entered into those different fields. So DBE was, in fact, my first certification.
For, you know, for our listeners out there, if you're interested in becoming a DBE, reach out Mackey Company or Procurement Games and shoot us an email. But the DBE program, federal program, it's the first certification a small minority woman, veteran-owned, if you qualify, should acquire. Ask for everything.
What's interesting about that is, as people of color, it is not a comfortable thing to have to disclose a lot of that information.
It's almost intrusive.
It is very intrusive.
Yes.
Microscopically intrusive.
Yes.
And so I felt that, and I had to push through that. It is still, as an entrepreneur, it is still a challenge to me to be vulnerable and transparent with all of my information, because that's what a business owner has to do in order to really be successful.
In order to win. That's right. The DBE program, as I like to say, it's a preference program, not a privileged program. Just because you have the DBE doesn't mean, one, you're guaranteed contracts, two, they're going to acknowledge that you're a minority, economically disadvantaged firm. You still have to chase. It is still a competitive process and difficult to obtain, but definitely something you should do as a small business, because it sets you aside and you have access to certain contracts.
What you articulately stated in the procurement game, the business owner wants to play in the arenas with the corporations and other entities, municipalities, that seek those certifications. It is not an absolute must. Yep. You can be excellent in your craft without becoming certified.
Jerry, let me shift gears here a little bit now that we know a little bit about you. Tell us about G. Harris Consulting. What are its core services? What do we get when we get Jerry Harris?
G. Harris Consulting offers coaching, consulting, and training to corporations, contractors, and municipalities to help them to be more inclusive. Most companies say they want to be inclusive, and especially after the death of George Floyd, you saw many corporations and other entities making proclamations and statements as to what they were going to do to be more inclusive. However, getting there and how to get there was not something that they really understood. And how to actualize all of those statements is something that many companies are still trying to figure out.
Fortune 500 companies are unpacking their DEI. Mm-hmm. Whether they realize it prior to Mr. George Floyd's death or after the fact, they're unpacking it and seeing that it was not effective, that perhaps some of the programs were actually barriers themselves.
Absolutely.
So let me pivot a little bit to talk about G. Harris Consulting. Uh-huh. How have you, I'm sure it's itching in your veins to be like, how can I bring in more small minority women veteran-owned businesses into G. Harris Consulting?
I really appreciate that question, because it's not necessary to compete. Again, people of color do not always immediately figure out how to bring down the walls to partner and joint venture. Like we talked about earlier, not being comfortable with exposing all aspects of your company and the inside workings. But what from Jump Street, my thought and commitment was to identify, being strategic, identify certain potential partners in the community and in the industry that I would align with.
You know, we can do more together than we do ourselves.
We're stronger together, absolutely.
The message here is start collaborating in your own space.
Absolutely. So my model has been, and it has already proven to be successful, that I will align with one or two other established companies. In doing so, I immediately have greater bandwidth, greater product offering. And it's important to be able to find people that are like-minded, though, business partners that are like-minded. And also doing that has helped me as well. Because I've long-term been in all of the industry groups, Women in Construction, NAWIC, NAMAC, National Association of Minority Contractors, and now NABO, National Association of Women Business Owners, my newest hat that I'm very happy to be wearing. It is important to resource all of those industries and those groups and understand where possibilities may lie.
Jerry, I love learning what goes on in your mind. So now I want to talk about, you know, April 2020. It's, you know, a year and a half-ish mm-hmm. into your company. What successes? What's worked for you? What are your successes? And we'll dive into some failures, right? Because I'm sure there were some balls thrown your way that swiped you out.
Absolutely.
And such. But let's talk about the successes, because that's more fun. And I want to look at it through two lenses, because you have two lenses. When you were with MGM, what worked? What would you encourage small businesses?
So there were so many companies that were able to be successful in their subcontracting services with MGM, but one that really stands out for me is a gentleman that has a mechanical company, and he says, Jerry, I'd love to get into MGM, and I want to do this, that, and the other, and this is where I am, this is what I have. And I said, oh, well, you need to do this, and this. And I think it was maybe a year or two later, and said, Jerry, you may not remember, but we had a conversation, you told me I need this, and this, so I have all that now, so now what's the next step?
Awesome.
So not only was he committed and passionate, but he was very focused, and I could tell very serious and determined to succeed. Long story short, I was able to help him to position him to have a conversation, present himself to MGM. He then became a mentee of the company. Major success. And to this day, he is doing very well.
He was open to be taught.
Yep.
And he was driven. And that's what I think it takes as an entrepreneur.
And I'd like to add, too, that he also had a plan.
Yeah.
He had a business plan and a vision for himself and his company that ultimately came into reality. And he stuck with that and was very committed to that.
So then let's go to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the G. Harris Consulting side of successes. How does that look like?
Well, it's feeling good and it's starting to look good. It's really starting to take shape in terms of how to offer the services that I offer, how to articulate what it is that I offer, because to take a resume, my resume, to turn it into a capability statement was a whole nother exercise. That's a whole nother conversation.
As somebody who helps, I think I've developed over 200-300 capability statements for our community. Yeah, most definitely converting all of your experience and not making it look like a resume.
That's right.
I bet.
It was a challenging exercise, but one that was very rewarding and beneficial once we made it through. Success that I feel that I'm experiencing is, again, because I recognize the need to allow myself to partner with someone to help strengthen me immediately. I said to many that my misery, having come through the ranks and from high school, dealing with prejudice and racism and always being challenged and marginalized and pushed out and told that you're not going to make it, you can't make it. After all of that, I now say that my misery in that sense is now my ministry. And the ministry is to help corporations and contractors and other municipalities to be inclusive.
That is such a powerful statement. Your misery is now your ministry.
Yes.
I love that. You have a phenomenal network.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I talk to my entrepreneurs about is developing a network that values you for your expertise and respectful of your time.
Absolutely. One of the things that I would also advise small businesses to do if they were in a situation, especially working with in the private sector, is to ask for interim payments. Just ask for what you need. You know you cannot afford that. Ask for that interim payment. And if you can do it, if they can do it, then it'll be helpful. And it's to always figure out ways to exist within the system.
It's a sign of weakness, right? When we don't have money, we don't have capital. And so why do we want to tell the world that we don't have it? So we're going to float it. And it is not, and this is a great segue into the macro, right? What is flawed in the industry in your eyes and what can be done. One of the things that I talk about in other podcasts is this access to capital,
mm-hmm.
right? The thing is, if they paid us on time, right? Because if you paid me within 30 days, like you said you would, then I have the cash flow.
That's right.
And that's what it is. It's cash flow that we need. Sure. You know, I will take $1 million, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
We can chase bigger projects and so on and so forth. And, you know, in construction, we have mobilization, we have pre-con that we can charge. And our community doesn't know that, right? Or they don't know how to ask for it. So hopefully to our listeners, they know to ask.
And for those who become entrepreneurs, to break through their own mental historical trauma that may be holding them back, to then become confident in being able to step forward and do what they need to do, have conversations they need to have, to ask for what they need. That's a journey.
Well, and be unapologetic.
Unapologetic.
Unapologetic. And I think being unapologetic for being a minority, for being a woman, a veteran, economically disadvantaged. I don't encourage people to lead with that.
That's right.
And I always talk to folks, you don't have to say that you are a minority woman business.
That's
when
right.
When they look at you, they're going to know.
That's right.
Right? Whether you're black or you're brown, they're going to know you're a person of color. Be unapologetic with your stance and how you present your company. it's ingrained in us to and I'm not going to use the right word, cower.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
To stoop.
Uh-huh.
To
uh-huh.
And rather than, again, squaring up those shoulders uh-huh. and saying, I have every right to be here. I have the knowledge, the backing, the everything. So
I belong at this table.
I
have a seat at this table.
Yeah. So let's talk about failures. What did you see coming through the pipeline?
There were some that came thinking that they were entitled, because they were black or brown, entitled to receive a contract or receive an opportunity.
Sure.
Entitlement is not reality. And then they were unprepared, could not articulate what it is they could do, could not demonstrate that they have the capacity and the competency to perform. Some also were even belligerent. It is all
storm the castle. Storm the castle mentality.
Presentation is important. Presentation is very important.
You know, and I love that you say that the biggest failure is that sense of entitlement in our community. And that goes for minorities, women, veterans, really any small business who has that medallion of alphabet soup. So then let's go to G. Harris Consulting. What were your learning lessons? What were your aha moments where you're like, ah?
There have been so many aha moments then in this journey already that I think to pick one that really stuck with me is, again, to understand how to ask and present what it is that I am now offering. One thing that I learned quickly, many new business owners may forget, is that you have to invoice for your money.
Oh, that's how you get paid.
That's how you get paid. And I'm like, oh, right, an invoice. It's not like a book, A through Z, of how to do this. This is how you do it. I know you say you like to sing, right?
That's right. This is how we do it. That's right. All right.
But I'm thinking, okay, well, when am I going to get paid? I'm Jerry. You didn't submit an invoice. You got to submit an invoice to get paid.
I sit here and go back to foundation.
Yes.
Right? Accounting, marketing, HR, management and operations, right? Those are like the primary colors. That's what it was called in another podcast. It was the primary colors of business.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's easier. Again, we know how to do the work.
Another challenge that you also spoke to in procurement dark side is the code that describes who I am, what I do, and really understanding how to appropriately select those codes in the certification realm. Because if that's not done properly, you can be missed.
We have a product coming out, a software system.
Mm.
It's actually a platform called dbecenter.com that's mm-hmm. coming out. And what it is it's going to humanize the codes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is done by keyword search. It will attach you to the different procurement codes in the government. And it starts with the NICS code, and then it'll connect you to AIA, to CSI, all
awesome.
Of these different codes. So when you enter, you know, I do sheetrock or I do, you know, painting, it's actually going to drill down to say, hey, the painting code goes with code 12345 in this realm, but then in this realm, it's 5678.
Awesome.
So the patent connects all the procurement codes together. But the most important part about that is it is a platform for us to be found.
Us and being people of color.
Us, communities of color, small mm-hmm. minority mm-hmm. women-owned businesses. And it's a capability statement that is searchable. Can you imagine?
Hmm.
And you're vetted, because we have consultants who will actually go through the assessment with you and verify. I guess that's a better word than vetted. Verify. All the information before your profile goes live.
So that's awesome.
That's hopefully going to come out. Again, shameless plug, I guess that's the frame I was thinking about. But you're right, those NICS codes. Again, in that podcast, I talk about your code may not exist. There's no diversity inclusion code. And there is a rise for DEI, and yet there's not a code. It falls under your general category mm-hmm. of administrative management. They're not really going to do a deep dive and confirm, can you actually do this work, until you become a DBE. So NICS code is self-assigned. I can say, Jerry, I'm going to have the architect code. Because I know how to read plans. I play architect all the time, right? But until somebody verifies that or vets you out that you have to have a degree, you have to have experience and everything, I'm going to keep my architect code.
I think the challenge that many corporations and companies say is either they can't find the diverse-owned businesses or how do we pre-qualify them? And that's where I'm offering to come in to do coaching and consulting to not only help coach the procurement teams mm-hmm. as to how to have conversations, because again, we're not always at the table, the diverse business. And when they get to the table, there is this challenge of how do you overcome the risk factors involved that are automatically involved in business? And then the unconscious, as we said before, unconscious bias as to what is prohibiting them from being successful. And that's, again, where G. Harris Consulting can come in to help bridge those gaps, help have those conversations, and knowing both sides of the table, what the owner or client is looking for and what the subcontractor is required to have is the strength of what we offer.
And I think for those who are looking to develop inclusive policies, you know, Jerry's information is located on procurementgames.org, and so that would be a unshameless plug. And, you know, reach out, because there are organizations out there. I mean, our listeners range, right? Not just small businesses. We have government agencies and major corporations who listen to our podcast here. And, you know, here's someone who is not just putting something together because they're passionate about it. She's actually walked this journey mm-hmm. and understands the corporate realm, and now is an entrepreneur, and now has those lenses as well.
Both sides and multiple sectors, the public sector as well as the private sector.
Yeah. Let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about the industry.
The corporations and municipalities that say they want to be inclusive are not actually doing it. There are no teeth in the current policies that require participation, such that if the companies that are then utilizing diverse-owned businesses don't follow through with that utilization, where's the consequence?
Absolutely. Government agencies and now private corporations are setting goals for participation on projects.
That's right.
And the policies of inclusivity says, we encourage you to use small, minority, disadvantaged economically, and so on, businesses on this project.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you're not graded for your inclusivity. You're graded on, quote, good faith effort.
Mm.
And we know what good faith effort looks like, right? Mm. We download the directory. We fired out emails. Well, 3 emails. We host meet and greets, and we're good. So long as I have a plan that says this is what I'm going to do, big corporation or government agency, then we're good, because that's community engagement. If you're going to give me the statement that says be inclusive, this is our preference, then you should also grade me on preference. And you're going to grade me on format, and then you're going to grade me on content, your work plan, but you're just going to hope that we include communities of color and small businesses and women and veterans. That to me is where the policy
yes.
in the industry.
So the lack of measurement, period, is a major part of the problem. We know that people measure what matters. The good faith effort is, again, in some cases, an exercise that is repeated and just yielding no contracts for diverse-owned businesses. And that's a problem. If we can figure out how to break through all of the barriers that inhibit minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, diverse certified-owned businesses from receiving contracts, that's what makes the difference. We need contracts.
Absolutely. So one last thought for G. Harris Consulting. What challenges and how do we overcome these challenges?
There are many who say that they want to do it, but they have not put budgets in place to do it, to then allocate resources to getting it done. So it's a talk. but it's not the walk.
I think the most common excuse is we already do that.
Mm. Well, I think the other challenge that is very prevalent is that when we talk about diversity in the construction industry, many mindsets go to Caucasian females. And if they have Caucasian females on their subcontracting list, in their makeup of their teams, they feel that they have so, for lack of a better word, check the box. And some people say that affirmative action has benefited more women and not women of color in the industry. And there are plenty of disparity studies that will prove that. Really necessary to continue the narrative around who in the diverse community, when we talk about ethnic minorities, are we really talking about that need to be granted opportunities? And that's what's needed, I think, to really help move the needle for diverse owned businesses to have a more equitable play in this procurement game and in the construction industry, no matter what tier they perform at, first, second, or third tier. Yeah. It's important for them to be engaged and considered at all levels of the bid, all categories and line items for the bid, so that they being the diverse-owned companies, can have a greater opportunity to win the bids.
Jerry, I got to tell you, today has got to have been one of the more powerful conversations I've ever had on this podcast. I want to thank you for sharing the insights about diversity program in construction for MGM. I also want to thank you for sharing your own journey as an entrepreneur. And wow, where is GH Harris Consulting going to take us? To our listeners, we had a lot of depth in our episode today, and I hope you took notes with the aha moments you had while you were listening. Please like, share, or comment so we can take this conversation to the next level on The Talk, our live stream open conversation on our YouTube channel, also called The Procurement Games. Next week, we hear from another trailblazer who will share the initiatives his department is doing to be purposely inclusive in the programs they are creating. Ben Baglio, director of the Governor's Workforce Board in Minnesota, will be joining us on the chat. Thank you again for tuning in today. And as always, go after that low-hanging fruit, but don't ever forget to look up and see the rest of the tree filled with ripening fruit. Until next time.